Well, this chapter is primarily about those that showed a great deal of faith in God, and based on their faith, they did what they were commanded. And we talked about 2 weeks ago Abel and the sacrifice that he made. It was a more excellent sacrifice because it did it according to what God had commanded. And I don't think I mentioned it in here. I mentioned it Wednesday night in the invitation that we understand that what God told Abel, he also told Cain. And Cain disobeyed, and he was called the evil one as a result of it. And banished. But Abel was pleasing to God because he did what he was told. And then we talked a little bit about Enoch and what was special about Enoch. All right, he walked with God and what? I'm sure that was all those questions, answers were the same. He was not, because God took him. And then in the 11th chapter in verse 6, it says, without faith it's impossible. Impossible to please God. He that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder, one that pays wages, a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. And then last week, Bill Jr. was in here teaching on Noah, and I'm sure that was an interesting class. What were some of the great points that were made about Noah last week? Okay. You see, you get that email about this guy over in Scandinavia that's built a ark to scale. And Stan Bronson is supposed to be traveling over there in April, I think, and he hopes to go see it. But they had pictures of this thing. Of course, we don't know about gopher wood. Yes, Don? Well, I won't say look anything like it, but the dimensions, the outside dimensions were right, weren't they? Yeah, he mentions that the guy had several windows in it. How many windows did the ark have? One. And then it had a bow on it. He said the ark didn't need a bow. It wasn't breaking water or anything. Well, there's a lot of negatives about it, but it still would be interesting to see this thing about the size of an ark. And wasn't it in there that he had a place with a hole in from one level to the next so the giraffe would fit in there? Speaking of giraffes, anybody ever read the Discovery magazine? Discover from Apologetics Press, and they had one on the giraffe recently, and they've got the same number of bones in their neck that we do. Of course, they're about this long each section, but it's quite interesting. Those magazines are designed for young people primarily, but you would be fascinated and learn a lot as well. Well, of course, the main point I'm sure about Noah was what? In this class, he was faithful. He was obedient to God. Sometimes Noah has been criticized about being a preacher of righteousness for so many years. But who did he convert? Well, he converted his family. And some of us don't do that. But Noah obeyed God and had faith. The eighth verse, it says, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he would receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. How would you like to be Abraham? Put yourself in his shoes, and you had that kind of direction from God. Just pull up, leave your birthplace, leave your family, and take off and go someplace that you don't know where you're going. Be kind of rough. What kind of information would Abraham have, or would he know about where he was going? Anything? You know, one thing he couldn't do is Google. Now, I was thinking about this week, and I just wondered, I'd like a show of hands, Brad Schelt, a week ago Wednesday night, in extending the invitation, and he made some reference to something that he Googled and had a few million responses. How many do not know what we're talking about when we're talking about Google? Does anybody not know? Yeah. Well, Madeline says she doesn't. Everybody else knows about Google. Boy. Sally, you don't know about Google? Okay. Caroline, you know all about Google, right? Okay, Gladys. Well, I don't know a lot about it. There's Buzz. He's the expert on computers. But it's some kind of a search engine. And you go Google.com, and it brings up, and you put in a word or a name or something like that and click on search. And Google just comes up with sometimes millions of responses. It is amazing. Amazing what it comes up with. And, of course, you don't need to look up everything they have. The first few are pretty good for you. But Abraham didn't have that. He didn't have a map.
He had God,
and God knew where he was going, but Abraham didn't. But you know, there wasn't much as far as geography is concerned. But by faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed. And where did he go? Where was it that God sent him? What was the land of promise? Canaan's land. So he sent him there. But he went out not knowing where he went, where he was going, and who went with him? Lot? Anybody else? Sarah? You know, others went with him too. It doesn't mention Aaron. This is Genesis 12 is where it tells it. But if you back up, kind of interesting the way the wording is. In 11, Genesis 11, 31 says, "And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot and his daughter-in-law Sarah, his son Abram's wife, and they went out with him from Ur of Chaldees to go to the land of Canaan. And they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran." So his father left with him as well, but he died in Haran. He did not make it all the way. But he went out, and he didn't know where he was going, but it was just a matter of doing what God said. Verse 9 says, "By faith he dwelt in the land of promise as a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise." So he journeyed to the land of promise as a strange country, and he was there as a stranger and sojourner. And how did they live? What did they live in? Lived in tents, and he didn't have any property there. He didn't settle down as it was going to be a permanent place. He understood that this promise was something that was coming later. He wasn't expecting that it would be in his lifetime. And they made no attempt. Of course, they had no army. They didn't have enough money to buy the place. And Abraham and his family were believers in God. What kind of religion was primarily in the land of Canaan? Pardon? Are you saying idolatry? I agree. Yeah, a land that worshipped idols. And so he was there, a stranger in this land in many ways. They were from a different culture. They were a different religion. And they lived in tents. They were people that were just traveling around, but they were confident that the promise that God had given to Abraham would be filled through his descendants. "For he waited for the city which has foundation, whose builder and maker is God." So they dwelled in tabernacles, they dwelled in tents, and Isaac and Jacob also, they were heirs of the same promise that God had given to Abraham. And they look for a city which has foundations. And what kind of city was that? Well, they were looking for heaven. They were looking for something that was yet to come in the 22nd verse of 12th chapter of Hebrews says, but you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels. And then in the 14th verse of the 13th chapter says, for we have no continuing city, but we seek the one to come. Revelation, the 21st chapter, and verse 2, John says he saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven. And then he proceeds to tell in that chapter a most beautiful description of what heaven was going to be. And so even in the time of Abraham, it would seem that they had some understanding, some appreciation of a permanent home in heaven that was to come. This fact that he was a stranger, and he regarded himself as a stranger and a sojourner, and yet he had a strong expectation that there was going to be a fixed habitation, a permanent inheritance. And so he had confidence that that would be given, this land would be given to his prosperity or his posterity, but he did not possess it himself. And so Abraham seemingly had a expectation of future happiness after death. It says, whose builder and maker is God. God was just the divine and immediate and direct architect of heaven. That this was something that was going to be built not out of work by human hands, but by God. 2 Corinthians 5th chapter and verse 1, I think. For we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Now he, in verse 5, now he who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who also has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. So we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith and not by sight. This journey that Abraham and those that were with him took was really a long and dangerous journey. And we're told that the distance from Haran to Canaan by a direct route was not less than 400 miles. How long would it take you to go 400 miles today? Depends on who's driving, I guess. But
transportation.
If you're going up I-95, 400 miles is what, 100 miles into Georgia or South Carolina or somewhere? If you're driving 70 miles an hour,
maybe 8 hours.
You're going, no, six is a 42, so it's less than 6 hours, right? You go 400 miles. How long do you think it took Moses to go 400 miles? Well, especially with, we don't know what all he had, but he took a lot of creatures with him in addition to his family, and so it was a long and difficult journey. And part of it was across a desert and kind of a perilous place, but very difficult. And but he went, and he was going among strangers, going on a difficult journey as far as geography is concerned, but he was going among strangers, and as we mentioned before, different religion and strange people coming into their area. and leaving country and home and the place of his birth and the graves of his fathers, and no certainty that he would see any of these that he left behind again. And he had no right, now we put that in quotes, no right to the country that he went to receive. He couldn't go there at the time and file any claim on it. This was something that God had promised to him and his descendants, but not anything that he was going to take control of immediately. He had no means of obtaining possession, no wealth, no armies to take it over. So he was just there in a foreign land, and if he were to tell the people in that land, well, God's promised this to me, they would think he was a fanatic of some kind. And so it was just with patience and obedience that he dwelled in that land, lived in his tents, and he didn't own any land, but except a little bit, we'll talk about a little bit later. Through faith also, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Now, when she first heard God's plan along this, she wasn't so convinced of it, was she? No, she laughed, but obviously, based on the scripture, she found out later and she became convinced of the of God and his power and what his plan was. And so later on, she, as it states here, through faith, she received strength, conceived seed. How old was Sarah? No. No, she was 90. And Abraham was 100. And it's kind of interesting, we talk about Abraham and what was the miracle that was involved in Sarah conceiving. All right, she was past the age of bearing children. Now, was it a miracle as far as Abraham was concerned? I know I'm kind of tricking you there. Sir? Okay. Well, that's interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But certainly in the case of Sarah, she laughed at first. But she received strength, and through faith she received strength to conceive. And even though she was, it was incredible for her to think that she would bear a child at the time that it was said. But she overcame that feeling, and her unbelief was overcome, and she credited the divine promise that was given. Yeah, 18:11 says, "Now Abraham and Sarah were old, well advanced in age, and Sarah had passed the age of childbearing. Therefore Sarah laughed within herself, saying, 'After I have grown old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also?' And the Lord said to Abraham, 'Why did Sarah laugh, saying, "Shall I surely bear a child since I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the appointed time I will return to you according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son.' But Sarah denied it, saying, 'I didn't do it. I did not laugh,' for she was afraid. And he said, 'No, but you did laugh.'" So she did laugh. And, you know, that's understandable. We're not going to be critical of Sarah, are we, when at that age, to expect that she would bear a child. But as God said, with God, all things are possible. And perhaps that we don't have that direct operation from God not speaking to us directly, except he speaks to us directly through his word. And do we have doubts? Do we have hesitancy? We have unbelief about what God has promised sometimes. We shouldn't have, but sometimes we do. But nothing else but faith could have led Sarah to believe that in her old age she was born a son. And she judged him because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, from one individual, that the whole Jewish people sprang from one man, and that as a result of his strong faith was made the father and founder of a nation. This is verse 12, Hebrews 11. And him as good as dead. What's that mean? Yeah, he's old. And as far as expecting him to father children, you know, it's presumed that he might as well be dead, because that wouldn't be possible. And to think that he would have a son at that period of life, then no more likely than the dead would have. But sprang even of one, so many as the stars of the sky. So here's one the same as being dead as far as having an offspring, and yet his descendants as many of the stars of the sky, an innumerable multitude. And this was agreeable to the promise that God had given to Abraham and then later to Isaac and Jacob. I'm trying to find the specific wording. Talking to Abraham after Abraham had questioned the fact that he would have a child, he said, then he brought him outside and said, look now toward heaven and count the stars if you are able to number them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. So human reasoning as compared to God's reasoning just doesn't match up. What's the Isaiah verse that says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, my ways are not your ways? As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my thoughts and your thoughts, and my ways than your ways. We have to be consistent, regular students of the Word to find out what His ways are, so that we'll know what to believe in. Verse 13 says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Now this is talking about Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Sarah. And it was true of Abel and Noah as well, that they died in faith, but they're not included in this declaration because the promises were not given to them. And of course, Enoch, we know he didn't die at all. So this phrase is talking about those in that immediate family. They'd been looking for something future that they did not obtain during their lifetime, but they died believing that it would yet be ours. So the promises had been made, but the promises had not yet been fulfilled. But having seen them afar off, they saw and understood that these would be fulfilled in future times. They saw the entire fulfillment of all the promises that God gave, that it would be in the future. God was very specific in talking to Abraham and telling him what would happen, and giving the stars in the heaven, the number of stars in the heaven, another number of sand on the seashore. And so they were persuaded of them. They have no doubt of their reality. And not only did they believe them, they had no doubt about them. It says, and they embraced them. That's not only just that they received them as true, but they brought them to themselves. They believed them strongly that was going to happen. And Jesus says in John the 8th chapter in verse 50, talks about Abraham rejoiced to see my day, having seen from way back then that these things were to happen, were to come to reality. And confess that they were strangers on the earth. Abraham said in Genesis 23 and verse 4, I am a stranger and a sojourner with you. So he regarded himself as a as a foreigner and having no place and no possessions there. And as a result of that, he had a desire to purchase something. What was that? What did Abraham want to buy? A gravesite, which was what? The cave? Cave of Machpelah. And he just asked for the people of the land there to he says, I'm a stranger here. That sounds like a song that we sing. But I'd like to have a place to purchase, to bury my wife. And so they sold him this the cave of Machpelah. And so they were strangers and pilgrims, which a sojourner, 23rd chapter of Genesis and verse 4. I am a foreigner and a visitor among you. Give me property for a burial place among you, that I may bury my dead out of my sight. And actually, they tried to give it to him, but he said, no, I'm going to let him give it to me at the full price, which was, I think, 400 shekels is what they said it was worth. I'll give you the money, take it, and I'll bury my dead. And they said, okay, 400 shekels of silver. So bury your dead. And Abraham listened to Ephron, and Abraham weighed out the silver for Ephron, which he had named in the hearing of the sons of Heth, 400 shekels of silver, currency of the merchants. So the field of Ephron, which was in Machpelah, which was before Mamre, the field and the cave which was in it, and all the trees that were in the field, which were within all the surrounding borders, were deeded to Abraham as a possession in the presence of the sons of Heth, before all who went in at the gate of his city. And after this, Abraham buried his wife in the cave, the field of Machpelah, before Mamre, that is Hebron, in the land of Canaan. So the field and the cave that is in it were deeded to Abraham by the sons of Heth as property for a burial place. So they were strangers and pilgrims on this earth, and they were such as reside a while among other people, but it was not their permanent home. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. So they're there, and they say that we're just passing through. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. They could have gone back to Chaldea, but they had no desire to. Of course, God didn't want them to go back, but they did not have sufficient interest or affection that would have caused them to go back to that land. And they would have had opportunity to do it, even though it was a long and perilous journey, that they could have retraced their steps and gone back, but they did not. Because verse 16, but now they desire a better, that is a heavenly country. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. So they desire a better country, that is a heavenly country. They didn't feel they were at home. There was nothing permanent there. They were, as they've said several times, strangers and pilgrims. Now we are strangers and pilgrims in this world, but there's some people in this life that they're making a home right here. They're tying themselves in with all worldly possessions and activities, and they're not strongly looking for that heavenly home, that it's a better home. But they're right at home, right here. So, wherefore, God is not ashamed to to be called their God. So since they had this elevated aim of looking for a permanent home, for a heavenly home, God was willing to speak of himself as their God and friend. It does not mean that God was ashamed, but he was acting as their friends in the relationship to them. And in Exodus 3:6, says, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. So it's not that God is ever ashamed of anything that he does, but they acted in such a manner that he saw fit to relate to them as a benefactor, as a protector, and as a friend. For he hath prepared for them a city, and or a heavenly country, which is often a reference to heaven, represented as a city, the new Jerusalem. They did not expect a permanent home on earth, and as it's repetitious talking about, they made no efforts to enter into the possession of the promised land themselves, but they looked forward to heaven. And if they have any permanent home, it's going to be heaven, and that's the permanent home that we're looking for as well. And we have the faithful lives of Abraham and the others to teach us, as well as the unerring word of God, which is everywhere, assures us. Verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called, concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. So we've already talked about the one strong evidence of Abraham's faith in leaving Ur of the Chaldees and going where he didn't know. But now the second, and probably even a greater test of the faith of Abraham, where he's told to offer Isaac, and said when he was tested. Now, according to the scholars, the word here, in the King James, is rendered tempted, and it lists about 26 places where it's listed that way. And it's not an inducement to try to encourage someone to do wrong, but just a trial in order to test his genuineness and his strength. So Abraham was placed in circumstances which showed what his real strength and confidence in God was. And it says he offered up Isaac. Did he? Yeah, in his mind he did. As far as he was concerned, it is amazing and probably very difficult to imagine the strength of Abraham's faith. And it was because God had promised and shown him many times that through your seed it's going to be blessed, and it's going to be a seed from you and Sarah. It's not going to be these other sons that you had with others, but it's going to be through a son of yours, through with Sarah. And Abraham just knew. In fact, when he tells the guy to, you wait here, and me and the lad are going to go up, and we will return. So apparently, Abraham was sure that once he killed Isaac, that God was going to raise him up. That's what he'd promised. How could he fulfill his promise that through his seed, all nations of the earth should be blessed, unless he was going to raise him up from the dead? And so there he was, ready to plunge the knife into Isaac. And who spoke to him? Who specifically spoke to him? It was the angel. Abraham, Abraham, don't do it. And God's convinced of your faithfulness in him. And there was a ram caught over there in the bushes, and so he brought the ram and sacrificed him to God. I don't know that we have the ability to put ourselves completely in Abraham's shoes at that point. Can't imagine. Of course, we have to assume that we'd have the same promise from God, that through this seed that he would bless. But very difficult, even understanding that. If Abraham had had at that time other children, it would be one thing. But where he had the one child, and he said, through this child, this nation's going to come. He had to have such a strong faith in God that this was going to come to pass, that he would sacrifice his son. So in his own mind, he had done it. And that's what the scripture says, of whom it was said, "And Isaac, your seed shall be called," concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. So he was willing and ready to make the sacrifice and would have done it if not the words of the angel in 22, verse 11. "But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, 'Abraham, Abraham.' So he said, 'Here am I, here I am.' And he said, 'Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me.' Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, 'The Lord will provide,' as it is said to this day, 'In the mount of the Lord it shall be provided.' Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, 'By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice.'" Yes, that's why Abraham is called the father of the faithful. Only son with Sarah. And that's the one on which God said the seed was going to be through that son. But it was the only son. Yeah, son of promise, he said. But the only son through Sarah. Yeah, there were sons with Ishmael and with others, but not his only son that he fathered, but the only son of promise and the only one with Sarah. And you might want to read before next week, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, that Abraham was 100 when he fathered Isaac, and Abraham married again. Remember that? Look that up and read the verses around that, and we'll see you next week.